Ben Fred Fridays on Scoops with DannyMac.com, coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios. Our visits with Ben are always presented by Henderson and Watercutty. See what they can offer for you. Legal advice, legal consultation, STLCriminalDefense.com. A couple of guys that are from St. Louis decided to put their roots in our town and help out folks in both Illinois and Missouri. STLCriminalDefense.com, and they can help you 24/7. Ben is here in spring training. Always good to visit with you, Ben. I look forward to these Fridays.
Yeah, man, good to be here, and glad I'm finally where the action is. I always get a little jealous being back in St. Louis when everyone's down here, but I'm here for the long haul through the end, so it'll be good to talk some Cardinals baseball with some boots on the ground.
How about impressions of camp? What have you taken away?
Yeah, so I've been here about a little less than a week now, and I think the first thing that hits you when you get here and you watch the games and you just walk around the clubhouse is the pitching. There's just so much of it. I was talking with some guys yesterday, some writers in Port St. Lucie, and it's like, I don't know of another camp where you could have what the Cardinals have had, where they've had a pretty significant setback to a key starter in Miles Michaelis and a very concerning situation with a key reliever in Andrew Miller. And, you know, these developments have not all of a sudden turned the camp into a bad camp. These are serious injuries, and certainly the Cardinals are not shrugging them off. But when you look at the list of options that could fill in for these guys, either temporarily or more long term, then it's really kind of too hard to get all that worried without kind of faking it. I mean, the Cardinals have so many guys who are really ready for a shot, and so many guys who are desperate to compete for an opportunity to get their foot in the door that, you know, you really, I go back to what Alex Reyes said when I was talking to him a couple of days ago. He goes, I think we could build two major league rotations from our pitching staff and be pretty good. And you kind of hear that and you go, okay, yeah, right. But then you actually start to do it and you've set it up like a draft. And you kind of go, okay, you know, it probably wouldn't be the best rotation in baseball, but if you split the talent and the top talent around, you could have two competitive rotations from this team, and not to mention some really impressive bullpen arms. So the pitching depth and the quality of it, to me, jumps out. The other thing that jumps out, this would be more on the other side, is, you know, the Cardinals have, and I'm going to write about this for this week, the Cardinals have some very big investments and a lot of hope riding in some guys who are getting older as baseball players. And we've seen some of those concerns pop up this spring, whether it's Paul Goldschmidt's elbow or it's Matt Carpenter's back or Andrew Miller's hand or, you know, a guy like, you know, Kim's groin and all these things, you know, all these little hiccups and these spring ouchies that are common. They happen in every camp or tend to be happening to the Cardinals players who are on the other side of 30. So I think that's a storyline this year, and I think we're seeing it develop in camp is can the Cardinals beat the aging curve on some of these guys they've invested in?
Yesterday, you wrote a very nice piece on Harrison Bader, and they're writing a lot on him, trying to have a bounce-back year, hit .205 a season ago. What are your impressions of watching Bader in this camp?
Ironically, I think this spring is kind of about, and season is kind of about Harrison toning things down, and as you know, Dan, Harrison doesn't really do tone down.
No.
he wants to wear his hair in a loud way. He wants to run the bases in a way that basically screams for attention from pitchers and catchers, and it drives them crazy and helps him. He wants to make jaw-dropping plays in the outfield, and he wants to be a star, and I don't blame him for that. And he's had a taste of it in his debut year, and you saw certainly the reaction of Cardinals fans. They love Harrison Bader. He also saw the flip side of that love last year when he really struggled at the plate, and he talked about, you know, realizing this is a double-edged sword here. If you don't perform and you have all of the attention, then that attention can turn from love to criticism pretty quick. And I think he's a guy who's motivated by the naysayers, but I also think he's in a healthy place where he's able to really tune out a lot of that stuff. And that's what I mean by quieting down. He's not, you know, he's not railing against his haters. He's also, I think, more importantly, trying to be a more contained player offensively. Look, Harrison Bader doesn't need to hit a ton of home runs. He needs to just get on base And I think there's kind of a trend for him that follows the one of Colton Wong, where it wasn't that long ago where Colton was determined he was going to get up there and smash home runs. Harrison has power to run into home runs. I think if he really prioritizes just getting on, he'll be better. How does he do that? Yeah, that's the big question. We've seen a quieter swing from him, a quieter load in the box. There's fewer moving parts. He's just more settled, and that's going to help him, I think. The other thing, and I was talking to Mike Schilt about this, is he is really, you know, pushing himself to really rein in his pitch selection. And that's the obvious thing. And Harrison knows it. He talks about it. He gave away a lot of outs and non-competitive at bats, swinging at breaking off speed junk in the bottom, you know, in the bottom away area of the strike zone, and mostly out of it last year. And if he can stop doing that and make pitchers come to him a little bit and be happy to take a walk, then his on-base percentage is going to soar up, and he will be a really important part of this offense no matter where he hits in it. So I think he's getting better at that. I think it's still a process. I think we've really seen him work his way through that in some of these games here lately. I mean, you go back to the game against the Twins, and he gets up and he's got a guy on third and first. And he tries to hit a ball to the moon and strikes out. And it's like, you didn't need to hit a home run there. You just needed to find a way to get the guy in from third base. And, you know, after that at bat, Mike Schilt talks to him, reminds him, hey, this is, you know, this isn't you. And he comes back out, and then he works a walk, and then he gets a single and takes what the pitcher gives him. I think in Port St. Lucie in the game after, you saw him do that. And Mike Schilt brought this up. You saw him do that during at bat. You know, he works against a lefty one of the Mets had, and he's got guys on base. He has one, you know, big cut that he tried to give it a ride, and then he really kind of went into what Schilt called battle mode, and he didn't end up getting anything out of it. He flied out to left. He kind of mishit a pitch, so it was a strike that he swung on, a full count, a breaking ball that he really, you know, I think barely mishit, and he was mad about it. He's not going to celebrate a fly out with that left two men on, but I think you're seeing him kind of really work to make some of the changes that will make him a more complete hitter. Obviously the results have to be there, but there's a reason the Cardinals are giving this guy a chance to once again kind of bar the door on the center field carousel. It's because his defense is elite. It's because his speed is game changing. And it's also because they see a potential, you know, the star power in him. They see the fans love him. They want this to work. And he's got one thing he has to do in order to make it work, and it's be a little more restrained in the box.
As you can imagine, you just came from St. Louis. Everybody's asking us about Dylan Carlson, what we're seeing down here. He is making the decision tough for the club. That's what they wanted to see, meaning he's had a very good camp. Where are you right now in that chase for that outfield spot for Dylan Carlson?
Well, I'm in the Brigham camp unless something falls off a cliff here. Look, the Cardinals are going to put themselves in a tough spot if they don't. They sold to their fans that they wanted to open up outfield playing time to the young guys, that they felt like these young players could help raise the bar offensively. And it was a tough sell, but for those who bought it, how can you then turn around and say we had one guy who lit camp on fire for the second year in a row, and we're not bringing him north? That's a tough sell. And what has Dylan Carlson done to suggest he can't help this team, that he's not one of the three best outfielders? I haven't seen anything he's done to suggest that he's not. I've seen a lot of things he's done to suggest that he has, and you've been down here longer than I have. I haven't seen him play every day, but you know, the guys who have are saying this guy, he does everything. He's a mature hitter, does it from both sides of the plate. One thing I've noticed with him, and this doesn't have a stat, so forgive me for going old school here, but he's just one of those guys where something good always seems to happen when he's at the plate. Even if he puts a ball in play, they have a throwing error against him. If he gets on, he goes first to third, finds a way to score. I mean, he had a game yesterday where he didn't get a hit and still did like really three good things that impacted the game. So that to me is a, you know, you don't ignore those things. So the Cardinals, I get it. You know, they like what Tyler O'Neill's doing. Totally get that. And I think they really see potential for Lane Thomas, who has not had quite as loud of a camp as Dylan Carlson or Tyler O'Neill. But this is what we talked about, Dan, when before I came down here. And it's what happens if there is a, you know, a definitive showing from some of these young guys in spring that suggests that their three best outfielders are, you know, are a group that doesn't include one of the current established starters. And I think you're going to see that conversation continue. Fans are going to keep asking about Dexter Fowler as long as he's, you know, not hitting in spring. And I don't think that Dexter's in jeopardy of losing his opening, you know, day starting job in right field, but I think we're seeing where Schilt's hitting him down in the lineup, that he's not, you know, expected him to be a top of the order guy. And I think we're going to see, you know, I think it will, if you're asking what's realistically at risk here for Fowler, I think the runway to holding on to that job is shortened if he has, you know, if he doesn't kind of pull out of this spring and have a better showing as things kind of get to crunch time. I don't think he will lose his starting job as much as some people would want to see that. But I think he could be in jeopardy of it once the season starts and the games begin to count because of some of the competition that's pushing up his way behind him.
It's clear Matt Carpenter is trying to spray the ball, take the ball the other way. What have you thought of his camp so far?
Well, I thought it's good to have him back from the back thing. I didn't get too worked up over the back tightness. It's kind of like people forget that this happens every year. You know, he's learned, I think, to not push through it because it can make it worse. And I think it's really smart for a guy who's getting older to realize his body and learn from it. So, you know, as long as he gets back to doing what he was doing before the back tightness thing popped up, I think people have to be encouraged. He's been very intentional about using all fields, about doing the things that he said he wanted to do. And to me, when a guy does it, it's a lot more valuable than when he says he wants to. We've seen a lot of guys talk about, I want to stop swinging for the fences, or I want to get better at this, and then their actions don't show that they can commit to it. I think Carpenter seems committed. And the other thing too is, you know, he has been, for a career worst season last year, he's been quite candid in owning it and being willing to just, you know, go after it. And I don't equate, you know, what he's saying with what will happen. You know, there's obviously a difference between the say and the do, and actions speak louder than words, and clearly he wants to get better. But I do think he's at a good place mentally with just, you know, what happened last season and how he feels like he needs to change it. He's not making excuses. He's not trying to explain it away. He's directing it head on, and you can tell by his at-bats that he's serious about trying to fix it. Now, will it work? I don't know. You know, the conversation there is similar to the one with Fowler. The Cardinals have talked a lot about getting Tommy Edman a starter's amount of at-bats, and that's great in theory, but can they actually do that by bouncing them all around the field? I mean, the truth that the Cardinals won't say, and because they're not going to sit there and root for someone to get hurt, is that whoever gets hurt first, Tommy Edman probably goes to their spot. But if that doesn't happen, then how are the Cardinals going to get a proper amount of at-bats for Edman if he continues to be the guy that we saw last year? So if he's playing every other day, or if he's playing one every three games, then if he's that guy last year, then you're sitting one of your best performing bats, and I don't love the idea of that.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Let's switch gears with Ben Fredrickson to the Post-Dispatch again. We're presented by the good folks at Henderson and Watercutty. I want to get into some basketball. Taking center stage this weekend will be the Missouri Valley Conference Arch Madness. You know, generally speaking, Ben, this is such a great event for the town, and Doug Elgin and Jack Watkins and Mike Kern and those that have been there for a long, long time, decades, have made it a point to have this as a signature event in our town. Now, with the renovations of what we've seen at the facility, that the Blues have gotten the All-Star game there, and now a lot of amateur events will come there, primarily, you know, big college events, and they get sold out. And then you have this particular event, which means a lot to our community in terms of financially the impact that it makes. It's just, I love it. This time of year is great. Baseball, hockey kind of winding down, and it's playoff-type hockey, and then it's college basketball where all the chips are on the table. This is a lot of fun to see what the Missouri Valley has done.
If there's one downside to being down here for the final weeks of spring training, and I don't complain about it because it's pretty good gig. It is missing the Arch Madness. It's such a fun tournament. They do such a good job with it. It's always exciting. You never really know which team's going to come out of it. I think it's more enjoyable now that Greg Marshall's not there throwing a massive tantrum on the sideline every year.
You could look at it two ways, though. You know, I mean, it was kind of fun to watch the theater that he put together, yeah. But yet it came at a cost, didn't it?
It was fun about the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
It felt like you're watching a bad movie over and over again. But I like Northern Iowa this year. I think I really like Ben Jacobson. They've been pretty good. I'm disappointed with Missouri State. I kind of had them as one of my favorites, and they had a pretty down year based off of expectations. The one thing that jumps to mind immediately when we talk about Arch Madness for me is Brian Burwell. Brian loved the Valley Tournament. The press media workroom is dedicated in his honor every year. And I think I totally agreed with his outlook on this. I think he saw it as just an awesome venue to tell great stories. And because these kids have great stories, I mean, there are some really impressive players who flew under the radar and then turned into really great college basketball players in this conference. It's competitive. There are great rivalries. The coaches are, for the most part, very, very willing to tell their stories. It's if you're a journalist, it's a great place to go and cover games because they do a great job with it. And the players for almost across the board are inspirational and fun to cover. So excited for it. Bummed I'm going to miss it. I wish they could do it the first couple weeks of spring training, but I know that doesn't actually work out for the college basketball schedule. So I do get a little bit jealous down here. It's one of the few times.
I'm not sure the Billikens have a signature win to get into the NCAA tournament. Probably have to run the table. And it looks like now the A-10 might be just a one-bid league. But, man, the Billikens are making this fun down the stretch and have become truly a very dangerous team going into their postseason tournament.
Well, the Billikens have made it a one-bid league because they beat the teams that were on the bubble.
Exactly.
The Billikens are not beloved right now in the A-10 conference office because they've undermined schools like Rhode Island, schools like VCU. I've heard a lot of questions like, what are the possibilities of SLU getting an at-large bid if they find a way to beat Dayton in the A-10 tournament, but not win the championship? And certainly it would help them. I think if you're SLU, your mindset has to be, look, guys, we got to go win the tournament. And the way they're playing, they certainly can do that. But I don't think Travis and his guys want to be sweating it out on selection day, worrying about the conference or the selection committee giving them enough credit. That tends to not be a place that schools like SLU want to be in. So I'm sure Travis is preaching, hey, let's go do what we did last year. They will be in obviously a much better position to do that than they were last year. And I like their vibe. And I'll say this too, maybe this is crazy. Maybe they'd run them out of the gym, but it's really hard, very hard, especially in college basketball, to beat the same team three times. SLU has given Dayton some of the best games it's played in this league, nearly beat them at Chaffetz in overtime. That score on the road at Dayton was, I think, more competitive than it seemed. I think SLU can get Dayton if they find a way to meet him again.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. The Blues, it's, maybe one bad stretch of games, and it really wasn't that bad, and they just continue to find ways to win. Chief does a great job of mixing and matching his lines. This is a fun time of hockey right now. If you're a Blues fan, it's been an incredible, incredible calendar year. And I would have to say, as we finish up with the Blues season, they are one of the teams to beat, and they've got another great chance to win the Stanley Cup. It's amazing to say that, but that's where we're at right now.
They're the team to beat in the West, in my eyes. And they've got some serious competition in the division with Colorado. The Avalanche have found their stride, and they're starting to maximize their talent. So it's not going to be a cakewalk. But yeah, I don't know how you couldn't pick the Blues as the favorite in the West based off of what they did last year, based off of what they've done this year, based off of the fact that they're going to add Vladimir Tarasenko relatively soon, a 30-goal scorer who's better than any trade deadline upgrade that was made on their side of hockey in the West. And, you know, in some ways it's better for the Blues that a lot of teams in the trade deadline on their side didn't get a lot better. You know, Kreider didn't go somewhere. He re-signed with Rangers. So I think they're feeling great. They're playing great. Jordan Binnington is locked in. That was the one thing that needed to happen, and it has happened. He's, you know, he was not playing like he did at times last season. He was, you know, he was giving up some games that were uncharacteristic for him. And it kind of seems like once the All-Star game got passed, and he really just decided, okay, let's lock in. And it's hard to play that way an entire season. It's impossible to. But I do think Jordan Binnington is a guy who can raise his level as crunch time gets closer and closer. I think we're seeing that happen now. So, you know, throw in Tarasenko to the mix, and we don't know what he's going to look like. We don't know how conditioned he will be. But that's a pretty nice thing to add there as you get close to the postseason. So, oh, and by the way, they've been picked to be in the Winter Classic against the Wild this upcoming season. They did not get blocked from that because they just hosted the All-Star game in the Winter Classic before that. They are very much becoming one of the league's darlings, and it's large part because they know the fan base will support it.
And they'll support it with television ratings. I mean, there's a reason that you have a Winter Classic against those two teams, but they know that Blues fans will probably travel, number one, and make it a signature event on their schedule, but also the TV ratings for that game will be through the roof, and that's also something that you have to take in mind with this.
Well, same thing that's boosting the Battlehawks, right? It's almost as if, you know, St. Louis will support sports teams that care about St. Louis. But, you know, we've talked about that plenty. I don't know if we need to go that road again.
Well, let's
hey, man, I mean, it shows up. The proof is right there.
Let's get into the Battlehawks, and we'll wrap it up with this. NFL Live a couple of days ago on ESPN and their panel of experts, they got into the XFL and talking about what St. Louis has done from television ratings to the attendance to the excitement of the team, how it really has become a fun venue to play in St. Louis. And they talked about, you know, has it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but has it gotten the attention of the NFL, and would the NFL look at that and say maybe we made a mistake and go back? I'm not sure what the appetite would be from the fans in town. I think they would certainly welcome a team back from the NFL. It's been a rough relationship between the NFL and St. Louis, but the Battlehawks have made this thing happen again to where they have garnered the attention of the national football fan, which is, I think, incredible what this town has done.
Yeah, and I'll give a lot of credit to Kurt Hunziker, the Battlehawks president. This is a dynamic guy. He's St. Louis through and through, jumped at a chance to come back to his hometown for a job that was, you know, how could he say he knew what he was getting into? It wasn't defined. And he had worked with minor league baseball. He is, you know, he had experience kind of trying to promote and sell a product that was a little off the wall in the minor leagues. And I think he's really smart. I think he's incredibly opportunistic, and I think he's really motivated. And I think some of this has been a direct result of some of the work that he's put in. I mean, he told me, Dan, that when they were kind of working on what this was going to look like, that, you know, he had more than like 200 meetings with people around St. Louis. They would go to Edwardsville. They'd go out to St. Charles. They had meetings everywhere. What do you guys want to see? What do you miss about pro football? What would you change about pro football? And they heard things, you know, one of the things I like about football are marching bands, and they have them in college and high school, but never in pro games. Well, okay. What do we do about with that information? Well, they went out and basically signed up area high school bands to get the opportunity to perform at games. So they feature a couple a game. For those kids, that's a blast. You know, that's a community building event. Those guys and girls are going to remember the day they got to play in front of a crazy crowd at a Battlehawks game. I mean, these are community building decisions. I mean, you saw just this week, the team was at the Children's Hospital. They do one community service project every week during the season, which is, you know, kind of like almost unheard of, I think, in terms of college teams and pro teams. They're usually, you know, laser focused on football. And, you know, for a league that we don't know how long it's going to be around, and we don't know if it's going to be a a sustained thing. I think it's pretty cool that this team is really making a point to try to you know, dig some pretty serious roots with the community. And I think it had to do that because of some of the scar tissue that existed because of the way things shook out with the Rams. And I just think he deserves credit because that was it wasn't the easy fix. It was the, hey, let's do this right approach. And it does seem to be paying off for them.
Finally, they're talking about opening up the upper bowl of the dome for the team that is from LA. What do you think that's going to be like that weekend in St. Louis?
Well, they should absolutely do it. And if because it's LA and it will be seen as a challenge, it would be, I don't know, maybe it can't sell out. Maybe that's too optimistic, but I bet it can look really good. And I hope that it would sell out because I know the folks who are going to these games and they care about what it looks like. And for people, I've had a couple people say, well, will that dilute it if they open up that top section and people don't go or it doesn't look full? Will that look bad on TV to have some people up there but not everybody? My answer to that is it won't look worse because right now, if you just were scrolling by the game and caught it on TV, it would look like no one's up there anyway. I thought initially that they might try to find a way to like curtain those sections off, but they didn't. So they're just sitting there empty. So I think getting some bodies in there, and I don't think it would be some, I think it'd be more than that. I think that would be a cool look just because we haven't seen that in any of these XFL games. The Battlehawks are crushing attendance. They're way out in front. But what would it look like? I'm just curious, Dan, what it would look like if everybody who wanted to go could go. Because I know people for the first home game were buying scalp tickets outside for like $120. And if somebody's doing that, then I got to think there will be a lot of people who will buy cheaper tickets to get into that top level.
It's been a lot of fun. Ben, always love doing these on Friday, and I'll catch up with you at the ballpark. Thanks so much.
Sounds good, man. See ya.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.